saying goodbye a half hour later, and lingering the way I'd only seen others do, before I finally made myself drive away. Texts all through the evening, and one final call, so his voice was the last I heard before going to bed. Then there was the first day back at school. Everything so different, if only to us. Again, I was a girl with a secret. This time, though, it was a good one. I felt bad keeping anything from Layla, especially something so big as me actually maybe falling in love for the first time. This, though, was complicated. Kimmy Crandall, the cautionary tale, was always in the back of my mind. As much as she liked me, Mac was her brother. Better to keep things quiet for now, anyway. So we'd done our best to proceed as normal. At school, during lunch, we stayed on our separate benches. At Seaside, he remained behind the counter with his textbooks, while Layla and I took our normal table to do homework. Nothing was different, except when we were alone. Like now, pulled over in a neighborhood playground called Commons Park. No deliveries waiting, nowhere to be. The engine was off, but the truck's cab still warm, as I curled up against him. Outside, red and yellow leaves kicked up by a breeze swirled across the windshield. In a twist I never would have expected, these hours between school and dinner I'd once dreaded were now the ones I most looked forward to. I was learning new things about him all the time. Not just that he was a good kisser. Very good, actually, and had the tightest set of abs I'd ever seen or touched. Quackers, maybe? There was also the way his hair was just long enough in front to always need to be brushed aside, something he did with a slight jerk of his head, something I now considered a signature move. The way that when he talked about a topic that troubled him, his dad expecting him to take over Seaside, for instance, he automatically lowered his voice, so you wanted to lean in deeper, listen harder.
"As far as my dad's concerned, it's just how it is," he told me a few days earlier when this came up. "Business is family, and vice versa. Nothing trumps them."
"You going to school would be good for the family, though," I pointed out. "More education, more earning potential. And Layla wants to take it over."
"Layla says she wants to take it over," he corrected me. "There's a difference."
"And there's Rosie, too," I said. "It shouldn't be just about you because you're the boy."
"Not how he sees it," he said.
He shook his hair out of his face again.
"I'm still going to apply to the U and a few other schools, though. I can't not try. That's like quitting."
I thought of our talk weeks earlier about broken things and how he didn't accept there wasn't a fix for everything somehow. It wasn't just about clocks and starters. Like so much with Mac, what he felt strongly about was wide and vast. I felt so lucky to be included in it. For as long as I could remember, other people had either overshadowed me or left me out in the open, alone. But Mac, as Layla had said all those weeks ago, was always somewhere nearby. He left me enough space to stand alone, but stood at the ready for the moment that I didn't want to. It was the perfect medium I was learning. Like he was my saint, the one I'd been waiting for. This was never more evident than when I talked to him about Ames. One day when we were out delivering, a red Lexus had pulled up beside us. I'd frozen. He'd noticed, and the next thing I knew, I was telling him everything.
"I can't believe your parents aren't aware of any of this," he said, when I finally finished talking. "The dude's got a bad vibe."
"Not to them," I said.
"They should be able to tell if you seem weird."
I shrugged. "I told you. They don't look too closely at me."
"Then make them," he said. "If you told them what you just told me, they'd pay attention."
I knew he was probably right. But just the thought of bringing this up with my mom made me nervous. Like I didn't have even a foot to stand on, much less a leg.
Just think about it, he said,
clearly sensing my hesitation.
Okay?
Yeah, I said. Okay. In response, he turned to face me. When he leaned in, kissing me once on the lips, then on the forehead, I felt safe enough to close my eyes. At home, however, things were getting more and more strained. On Thursday, my parents would leave to spend the night at a hotel in Lincoln so they could attend Peyton's ceremony the following morning. My mom was in overdrive, fielding phone calls and sending emails as she organized the reception she and a couple of the other family members had put together.
I was thinking we could have dinner with the Biscoes the night before, she'd told us one evening.
You know, Rogerson's parents? I told you about him. He's on Peyton's Hall. It might be really helpful to share our stories, get to know one another.
I've found a good place that takes reservations.
Julie.
My father's voice was gentle, even though it was obvious he was cutting her off.
Maybe we should hold off on that.
She put down her fork.
Why?
My dad looked so uncomfortable, I found myself shifting in my chair in sympathy, like it was me who'd chosen to walk out on this particular plank.
We're going to an event at a prison, he said finally. Not a preschool.
Instantly, her smile vanished. You really think it's necessary to point that out to me?
I didn't before, but from the way you're talking...
I, she said, her voice wavering, rising, am putting a positive spin on a bad situation. When life gets dark, you celebrate any light. This is my light. Let me enjoy it. It was a testimony to how black things had gotten that this event signified brightness. I was always aware of how things had changed. Times like this, though, it surprised me all over again. I couldn't talk to her about this, of course, or to my dad either. But there was someone who did understand, or at least listen. Thank goodness.
So, Sydney, Mrs. Chatham said, how are things at home?
We were in their living room with her in her chair, me on the couch keeping my distance from the dogs. Mac was taking a break from deliveries to tinker with the truck's still stubborn starter, as he often had to, and I'd taken to visiting with his mom until he was finished or another order came in.
The same, I told her as the engine gurgled to life outside, then quickly died.
My parents are going to a graduation thing at the prison, and my mom's completely obsessed with it. You'd think he was getting a diploma from Harvard the way she's acting. She smiled.
I felt the same way when Rosie finished her rehab. You take what you can get, I guess.
We were both quiet a moment. Outside, I was pretty sure I heard Mac cursing.
Layla tells me you bumped into that boy, she said. At Superthrift.
Just hearing this, I had a flash of those galoshes.
Yeah.
It was the first time I'd seen him face to face.
And?
I freaked. At the other end of the couch, one of the dogs sighed loudly.
I couldn't even speak.
Oh, honey.
She was quiet for a moment.
It's not like it's going to come easy, if it ever comes at all. You know that, right?
I just don't know what I could say that would even make a difference. An apology won't change anything.
Maybe you shouldn't expect it to. For him, anyway.
She looked at me, her gaze kind as always.
But that doesn't mean it wouldn't help in some way for you. It could, you know.
Lift some of the weight.
Again, she'd hit it dead on. How the guilt felt so heavy on me. Like 10 of those drapes they put on you at the dentist before they take x-rays. More than enough to hold you down,
no matter how you struggle to rise up.
I don't know, I said.
You don't have to right now, she told me. You're doing just fine. I wasn't so sure about this, but hearing it was a comfort anyway.
As was the sound of the truck starting up again outside, the engine revving a few times, making stuff work. Somehow.
That afternoon, I came home to find the house empty and the phone ringing. It was 5:45, a time that Peyton often called. This time, though, I didn't have that familiar sense of dread when the recording announced it was a call from Lincoln.
Hey, I said once he was on the line.
How are you?
Okay.
A pause. Voices in the background.
What's up with you?
I paused, wondering what I should tell him. It seemed weird to mention Mac or the Chathams, to talk about a world he was no part of, all my own. But then I remembered that day in the woods.
I went out to the sinkhole with a friend of mine, I said.
It had changed.
Yeah?
I nodded, even though he couldn't see me.
I mean, it was the same, I guess, but the perspective was different. I remember it being so wide, huge.
It looked even bigger when you were halfway across it, he said.
I bet. We were both quiet a moment. Then he said,
"So, it's funny, that show you love, the one with those crazy women? I've been watching it."
I blinked, surprised.
"You're watching Big New York?"
He laughed.
"And Los Angeles, although I can't believe I'm admitting it."
"I thought you hated those shows," I said, still in shock.
"I did," he sighed. "But this friend of mine here, he's totally into them. He's a doctor, a shrink. He claims for him it's about the personality disorders, all that narcissism. But I think he just likes the drama."
"He's your doctor?"
Another laugh.
"No, he's an inmate, an addict. Got busted for selling prescriptions. We call him MD. He's a nice guy, even if he has bad taste in TV shows."
"Hey now," I said, "remember who you're talking to."
"Like I could forget," he said.
And then the recorded voice came on, warning us time was about up. For the first time, I wished it weren't. I didn't mention any of this to my mom, even when I told her he'd called. After all the pushing for us to talk, now that we were, I wanted to keep it to myself. Peyton didn't tell her either. Another secret, all our own. The truth was, Mom was so immersed in her plans, she wasn't noticing much of anything. The upside was she hadn't said more about Ames staying with me. It was foolish, I knew, to think I'd dodge this particular bullet because it hadn't been fired just yet. But everything else had been going so well. I should have known better. "So," she'd said that morning when I came down for breakfast, "tomorrow your father and I are leaving at around 3. Ames will be here by 10 at the latest. It's not ideal, but with Marla out of the picture and his valet job, it's the best we can do." She had her back to me as she spoke, busy checking things off another list. Piled on the counter were all the baked goods she'd gotten at Big Club, the bulk store for the ceremony. Danishes, cookies, cupcakes. The whole room smelled like sugar.
"I really think I can stay alone," I said. "By the time he gets here, I'll almost be in bed anyway."
She picked up a box of mini cupcakes, moving it to the top of another stack. "It's all set. Now get your cereal together, you're going to be late." End of conversation. Once again, I was an item on a list, crossed off and archived. When I left 20 minutes later, I couldn't help it. I slammed the door behind me. Now in the truck, Mac's phone buzzed. He shifted behind me, pulling it from his pocket.
"Delivery up. Back to work."
I glanced at my watch. It was 5:15. and I'd told my mom I'd be home before 6. But all I wanted to do was stay in this safe, easy place with Mac's arms around me. But he was already starting to sit up as I said, 5 more minutes?
2.
He kissed the top of my head, easing back. A moment passed, and then he said,
You know, we don't have to record at your place if it's a problem. Eric will find another way. He always does.
It's not a problem, I told him. It's going to be perfect. This was not a word I used much, if ever. But sometimes, lately, I'd allowed myself to think that things actually could work out. After all, I was here now, with him, and who would have ever expected that? He drove me back to Seaside, pulling up to my car before heading in to grab the delivery. We said our goodbyes the careful way we always did, and I got out, shutting the door behind me. But as I started to walk away, I looked up at that setting sun, the sky blue, dappled with pink. Perfect, I risked thinking again, if only for a moment. I turned around and went up to Mac's open window.
Forget something? He asked.
Yeah, I told him. This. I stood on my tiptoes, leaned in, and gave him a kiss. I could feel his surprise, then hesitation, before he eased into it. It was a risk, being public like this, but I was already tired of hiding. Anyway, Layla, my only true concern, was with Spence. It didn't occur to me to think of anyone else. At least, not then.
Wow, Eric said when I opened the door. Nice digs.
Did you just say digs?
Irv asked from behind him, where he was filling the rest of the doorframe.
Really?
What? It's actually a quite common term.
And these are actually quite heavy, so would you enter the digs, please?
Eric rolled his eyes, and I stepped aside to let him in. He was carrying his guitar, his backpack over one shoulder. Following behind him carrying all the rest of the equipment were Irv, Ford, and finally Mac. The fact that I'd noticed this inequity must have been obvious, as Mac explained.
Eric's got a bad back.
Eric,
Irv added, huffing slightly as he lifted a black case about half my size over the threshold.
Claims he has a bad back. I've never seen evidence of it, except when we have something heavy to move.
It's my L3 and L4 disc, Eric replied in a tired voice. It's agitated.
I'm agitated. This shit is heavy.
Irv put down the case with a thunk, rattling the glass table beneath my brother's portrait.
Where are we taking it?
Downstairs, I told him. Follow me. I led them through the door, past the kitchen, down the winding stairs, more huffing, more comments about Eric's disc, and finally into the workout room, and then the studio. As I flipped on the light, Eric stood back, taking an appreciative look around while the others carried in the stuff.
Wow! This was all for your brother?
Was supposed to be, I said. He kind of got, preoccupied before he could use it much.
Is that what we're calling prison now?
Irv asked.
A preoccupation?
Mac poked him, hard.
Hey, watch it. What?
Irv looked at him, then at me.
Oh, sorry, Sydney. I'm just talking, being stupid.
It's fine, I said, and smiled at him. Still, Matt came over as Ford and Eric began unpacking instruments.
Sorry about that. Irv's kind of a straight shooter, especially about certain things.
He's right, I told him. My brother is in prison. It's kind of refreshing, actually, to be around someone who calls it that.
Yeah?
I nodded. And then Ford was calling his name, asking him something. As he went over, then bent down to unpack a case, I watched the St. Batilde pendant around his neck slide into sight before he reached up, tucking it back under his collar. Yesterday I'd held it in my own hand, between my fingers, twisting it in the dappled light at Commons Park. Just remembering made me flush.
So, Sydney,
Eric said, jerking me abruptly away from this thought.
I hear we're on a time constraint here. How long do we actually have?
I looked at my watch. It was 6:30. About 3 hours.
Not long to get down these songs.
He lifted his guitar and backpack onto the nearby couch, an action that apparently did not require his agitated disc, then rubbed his hands together.
When did you say Layla was coming?
7 at the latest, Mac told him.
Okay, then I better get acquainted with this equipment.
Eric walked over to the board of switches and buttons, taking a seat in the rolling chair there.
Man, this is nicer than the setup we had at Vamp.
Vamp? He sat back, twisting a knob.
Vintage Acoustic Musical Performance Camp. It's where I spent last summer. Music and production classes during the day, serious jam sessions at night.
Wow, sounds great.
Life-changing, he corrected me. I mean, it was for me anyway. Spending 8 weeks with people who actually care about the music the way I do? Like an oasis in the ongoing creative desert that is my life here.
There was a rap on the glass separating us from the booth. When I looked up, Mac was standing there.
We can hear you, you know.
Eric flipped his hand, hardly bothered, but I noticed he did unpress the only button whose function I knew, the intercom, before saying,
Look, don't get me wrong. These guys like to play, but they're not passionate. Once high school is over, they'll tell stories about how they were once in a band. I want more than that, you know?
I nodded as Irv helped Ford stack one amp onto another. Mac was back at his drum set, twisting clamps onto cymbals. I was watching his face, so focused, as Eric said.
So, there's been something I've been wanting to ask you.
Me?
Yeah, you.
He smiled at me.
It's not a secret I think you're cool, Sydney. I want to take you out. What do you think?
I honestly did not know what to say. This was such a direct question. There was really no way to circumvent or dodge it. Still, I was trying to think of a way to do just that when I heard the doorbell ring.
Saved.
Shoot, I said, as if I weren't insanely grateful for this interruption. I'll be right back, okay? Although I had the entire way across the workout room, up the stairs and through the foyer to consider what to say when I returned, I made little progress. When I opened the door to find Layla supporting a red-faced, mud-streaked, damp Spence, though, all thoughts of Eric vanished. A little help? She said, dragging him into the foyer. As they passed, I got a strong whiff of alcohol, and strangely, fertilizer. Do you have a towel or something?
Hey, Sydney,
Spence slurred at me cheerfully.
What's up?
Stop moving, would you please? Layla said to him. Just stay there and take off your shoes. With that, she disappeared into the powder room, leaving us alone. Weaving slightly, Spence kicked off his Nikes, first one, then the other, before reaching into his back pants pocket to pull out a slim glass bottle. He uncapped it, took a big swig, then held it out to me.
Vodka?
No, thanks, I said. Is it raining or something? He shook his head, taking another sip.
Sprinklers. Came on when I was crossing your neighbor's backyard. Serious water pressure, apparently. Sure you don't want to drink?
She doesn't, Layla replied, emerging from the bathroom. She was holding one of our hand towels, which she held up to me, raising her eyebrows. I nodded, and she tossed it to him. Dry off and put that away, would you? They're not going to be happy I brought you in the first place. Nonsense. Spence slid the bottle back into his pocket, then stepped closer to her, sliding his arms around her waist.
I told you, baby. You won't even know I'm here.
While Layla clearly doubted this, she allowed herself to be pulled in for a kiss. To her surprise, not to mention mine, it quickly became open-mouthed and full-on tongue. Luckily, just then, the phone rang. I ducked into the kitchen, grabbing the handset. Hello? This is a collect call from an inmate at Lincoln Correctional Facility, began the familiar robotic voice. Do you accept? Yes, I said, taking a few steps toward the front window. Are they downstairs? Layla called out from behind me. When I turned to look at her, Spence was nuzzling her neck. I nodded. Did they start already? There was a buzz, then a click. Sydney? Yeah, one second, I told my brother. To Layla, I said, Yes, and I don't know. I'll be there in a sec, okay? She nodded, pulling away from Spence, and disappeared down the hallway. He followed, removing the bottle from his pocket again. Great. Sorry about that, I told Peyton. I have some friends over. How's everything? Okay, he said, considering that I've actually picked a team on that stupid show you like so much. Let me guess, I said. You're Team Air. Nope, he replied. MD is, though. I'm solidly Rosalie. What? I said. That's crazy. She's insane. Oh, and Air isn't? Did you not see that dinner party where she pushed Delilah in the pool? She was provoked, I said defensively.
Yeah, whatever, he snorted. Well, I don't want to hold you up if you have people over. Is Mom around?
I blinked, surprised. No, she's already headed there.
What?
She and Dad left this afternoon for the ceremony?
It's not until tomorrow, he said.
Yeah, but I guess she had a lot of stuff to do for it or something. He said nothing. They're staying at a hotel, meeting some of the other families, I think. There's a difference between quiet on a phone line and angry silence. One is light, the other heavy. Right then, I pictured the connection between us sagging, almost to a breaking point.
I can't believe this, he said finally.
Behind him, the noise I knew from our few conversations was typical. Raised voices, banging, intercoms. Prison was even louder than Jackson.
I told her I didn't want her to do all that. I didn't want them here at all, actually. I'm in prison, not school. I don't get why she can't understand that. Wow, I thought. I'd been waiting so long for someone else to feel this way. I'd just never expected it to be Peyton.
As I wondered how to reply, I heard a thump from beneath me in the studio. I guess, I began, then found myself hesitating. The line buzzed. She's just hanging on to anything she can make feel normal.
But this isn't normal, he replied. I screwed up. I hurt someone, and I'm doing time for it. When she tries to make it anything else, it makes me nuts. This needs to be different, you know? To be hard. Everyone else understands that, but she just doesn't get it.
Even with our recent talks, this was the most my brother had said to me in months, if not years. It was so unexpected, not to mention emotional, that I realized I was holding my breath. For so long, I'd seen him and my parents as one unit, sharing the same party line. But Peyton was his own person and carried his own weight. How could I not have understood that? I'm sorry, I said. Two words, but they felt heavy, too.
Yeah.
A pause. His voice sounded tight. I thought of him walking across that sinkhole, I saw bravery, him something else.
I'll try her on her cell.
Okay. Take care, Peyton.
Bye, Sid.
Another click and he was gone. I hung up the phone, feeling a pang as I remembered my mom organizing her big club baked goods the previous morning. Not to mention all the other work she'd done. She could tell us and everyone else it was for Peyton, and maybe she really believed that. I wasn't so sure. I hadn't thought I could feel more ashamed about the entire situation. Wrong again. Chapter 18.
Wait, Eric said. I didn't like that intro. Let's try it again.
Ford groaned while Max sat back behind the drum kit, rolling his eyes.
Dude,
Irv said from beside me.
It's a demo for a showcase, not your first album.
That doesn't mean it has to suck, Eric said.
It's not going to exist if you don't ease up, though,
Irv replied.
We've been here for how long, Sydney?
Hour and a half, I told him.
Hour and a half,
he repeated, emphasizing the words.
And you've got nothing down. It's time to get serious.
I am being serious, Eric said.
Then get less serious,
Mac told him.
Let's just get this done.
Eric, his expression darkening, turned his back to the glass between us, adjusting something on his guitar. I looked at my watch. Ames would be showing up at 10, at which point they and all their equipment needed to be long gone. At the beginning of the evening, this had seemed entirely doable. Now I was beginning to have my doubts. Eric's perfectionism was one problem. Another was Spence, who, after arriving and immediately knocking over two amps, that was the thump I'd heard, had been told by Layla to sit on the couch out of the way. There he proceeded to drink most of his bottle of vodka, providing a stream of not helpful commentary.
Are you sure you're in tune? More cowbell!
As he did so, I had no idea why Layla had brought him. I didn't, she told me out in the workout room, where we'd slipped away during yet another complicated skirmish about verse transitions. I told him I was coming here and that your parents were gone. All he heard was party, so he grabbed a bottle and headed over. When Rosie dropped me off, he was in the driveway, waiting. I thought of earlier when I'd opened the door to see him standing on the porch, slumped against her. Does he drink like this a lot? No, she said, her voice clipped. She added, I mean, some, sure, but it's not usually like this. Anyway, it's not his fault they're not recording. It's Eric's. I glanced back at the open studio door, where Irv was now sitting back in the chair by the control board, his hands over his face. I could relate.
Layla!
Spence called out, then leaned forward on the couch, peering at us.
Come here! I miss you!
One sec, she said, pulling her phone out of her pocket. She glanced at the screen. Crap! What is it? I asked. My mom. She turned, walking back into the studio, leaning over Irv to hit the intercom button. Mac, Rosie just texted. She thinks mom might need to go in. He was on his feet immediately, coming out the door.
What happened?
I don't know. I'll call right now. She put her phone to her ear, walking over to lean against the wall. Spence, on the couch, offered her the now almost empty bottle, but she waved him off. Hey, it's me. What's going on? As Rosie replied and she listened, we were all silent. I glanced at Mac, but he was watching Layla. Okay, she said finally. Yeah, well, keep me posted. If you decide to take her, we'll meet you there. What? We were planning 10:30. But we can come now if she wants us to. Someone exhaled, frustrated. Eric, I assumed. All right. Yeah, do that. Thanks, Ro. She hung up, then looked at Mac. Just the usual. Dizzy, shortness of breath. She got super lightheaded and Rosie panicked. But Mom says she's fine now. She's going to keep an eye on her.
Could be those new meds, he said.
It was like the rest of us weren't there.
They said the side effects could be more pronounced, even with the smaller dosage.
Which sucks because they're working. Layla slid her phone back in her pocket. Whatever, let's just try to get this done. I want to get home.
Seconded, Max said, turning back to the recording room.
Once inside, he said to Eric,
This take is the last one for this song. Then we move on, okay?
Eric did not look happy about this. Still, he nodded, adjusting his guitar strap as Irv got everything on the board set up again. Mac counted them off and they began playing. I held my breath as they passed the intro into the first verse and then the chorus, the farthest they'd gotten so far.
Sit down and relax. Have a drink, Spence said to Layla, pulling her down beside him.
She sighed, then, to my surprise, reached for the bottle and took a swig.
That's my girl. Better, right?
She swallowed, wincing, then wiped a hand over her mouth. I swear, I don't see how this night could get any worse.
I could.
Because right at that moment, Ames appeared in the open doorway. I was so startled by the sight of him, I thought for a minute I had to be imagining it. When he spoke, I knew it was for real.
Well, look at this. It's a party.
I opened my mouth to respond, but unfortunately, Spence spoke first.
Now we're talking!
He turned, looking at Ames, and held out the bottle to him.
Welcome, comrade. Drink?
No, I said, answering for him. Still regrouping, or trying to, I said, It's not a party. They're just recording a demo. Ames made a point of looking at the bottle, as well as Spence slumped against Layla, before turning his attention back to me.
Your mom didn't say anything about this.
She's been distracted, I replied. And anyway, they're almost done.
I wish, Irv said.
The guys were wrapping up the song now, having actually made it through the entire thing.
Although we're further along than we were, I'll give you that.
I didn't like the way Ames was surveying the room, taking it all in. Layla on the couch, the guys on the other side of the glass, Irv in his seat at the controls. Then, finally, me.
Let's talk outside, he said. Okay?
Layla was watching me as I followed him out into the workout room, where he gestured for me to take a seat on my dad's workout bench.
So, he said, crossing his arms over his chest. Want to tell me what's going on here?
I did. They're recording a demo.
And drinking, he added.
Spence is drinking, I corrected him. I don't even really know him.
And yet, he's here in the house, while Peyton and Julie are gone.
He cocked his head to the side.
I have to say, Sydney, I'm surprised. This is not like you.
They're my friends. They needed a studio. It's not that complicated.
And that guy playing drums? Who's he?
I blinked, caught off guard.
Why?
He shrugged. Then leaned back against the wall, studying my face.
Just curious. I saw you with him the other day in the parking lot of that strip mall off Mason. You seemed pretty close.
Very close, actually. It took me a moment to catch up. In the lag, he was watching me, the slightest of smiles on his face.
Are you going to tell my mom about this?
Instead of answering, he looked back into the studio, where Spence was now stretched out across the couch. Eyes closed, the bottle on the floor beside him. Layla was nowhere in sight, which I assumed meant they had indeed moved on to her song.
"I don't know," Ames said finally. "We'll talk about it later."
I wanted to know now. Then I could accept my sentence and the reality of the repercussions. But I knew Ames. Now he finally had the upper hand, and he wasn't going to relinquish it any earlier than necessary.
"Sydney?"
Glancing at the studio, I saw Irv filling the doorway, looking out at us.
"Yeah?"
"We need you."
I looked at Ames.
"Go ahead," he said. "I'm right behind you."
I went back in to find Layla on the other side of the glass, headphones on, a microphone in front of her. Eric was at the board getting things set up so that Irv could record again. Behind me, I could hear Spence snoring.
"What's going on?" I asked.
"We need backup vocals," Eric told me, still futzing around with some dials. "No time to layer them in, so you're up."
"Me?" I said. "I don't sing."
"Everyone can sing."
"Let me rephrase that," I told him. "I don't sing well."
"It's not opera," he replied.
"We just need to fill out the sound. You know the song, right? Polly Prescott, 4 a.m.?"
Of course I did. After I finished swooning over the safe boy next door, Logan Oxford, Polly Prescott was my first bad boy crush, or as bad as you could be, wearing eyeliner while performing concerts at malls. 4 a.m. was his biggest hit, a half-rap, half-sung description of driving home after a night of partying and fighting and wanting to call a girl, but deciding she deserved better. It was just the kind of thing that, at 13, you wanted some lovesick rebel to sing about you. I'd had it on repeat for weeks.
"I think I remember it," I said.
"Great." Eric stood up, turning to face me.
"Now, we're doing it acoustic, very quiet in contrast to the original production. Remember all those big guitars? It was all swagger, or fake swagger, actually. So for this, we're turning it on its head, going light, balladesque, more of a love song than the original ego-driven recitation of various acts of valor that may or may not have actually happened."
Beside me, Ames blinked.
"Whoa."
"Exactly," Eric told him.
"So we'll just have you come in during the chorus behind Layla to convey the routine aspect of this, that it's not just one girl who's felt it, but many. But just for two lines. You're sleeping only a mile from here, but it feels so far away. The two following. Well, I want to see you, touch you, feel you. In my dreams, I'll let you stay. So much for pretending I didn't know it by heart."
"Right, for those. I want only Layla for contrast.
See, your lines are about the truth of this situation, the wanting. The other are the ideal, the way girls wish guys really felt, okay?"
It was a testament to how familiar I'd become with Eric and his music discussions that none of this seemed over the top to me. Ames, however, exhaled as Eric went back into the recording room, then said,
"Man, I've heard that song a million times. Never thought of it that way."
"Nobody does,"
Irv told him, adjusting something on the board. I turned back to the glass, looking in at Layla, who was nodding as Eric talked to her, explaining all this again. Mac was back on the drums, saying something to Ford, when I felt Ames move closer, putting his hands on my shoulders. He gave a light squeeze, then left them there while saying,
"So you're singing. I can't wait to see this. Nervous?"
"No," I said, although I was. I shifted slightly, trying to get out from under him, but he was too close, and now squeezing again.
"You'll be great. Just relax."
I swallowed, doing the exact opposite and tensing up, hoping he'd take the hint and back off. But no. He was still right there, his fingers lightly on my shoulders, when Mac looked up and saw us. Seeing his face, I had a flash of Layla's all those weeks ago at the courthouse, but while her expression as a stranger had been a question, "You okay?" Max was different, like he knew I was not, and because of that, he wasn't either. He was just getting to his feet when Eric spoke. "Okay, Sydney, you ready?" I pulled away quickly, then walked into the recording room, where Eric was setting up a microphone. As he waved me behind it, Layla leaned into my ear. "What's he doing here?" "He's staying tonight, but he wasn't supposed to come until 10. "Huh." She adjusted her headphones. "What are the chances? Is he going to tell your mom?" "He says we'll talk about it." She made another pointed look as Ames gave us a thumbs up. "I'd stay if I could, I swear, but I've got to get home to my mom." "It's fine," I said. Then I turned, glancing behind me at Mac, who, as I expected, was watching me. I only had a second to try to convey that he shouldn't worry. I was all right. But just in case, I said it too. "It'll be okay." At that point, despite everything, I still believed this. This confidence stayed with me as we ran through a quick rehearsal, then started to record. I could almost forget about Ames on the other side of the glass and whatever might happen later. Right then, there was only the music, Eric's guitar and Ford behind it, the haunting sweetness of Layla's voice moving over the words I knew so well, and then my own, blending with it if only for a moment. Through it all, Mac was behind me, keeping the beat, holding it all together. Later, I'd look back at this as the last time things felt perfect, and be so grateful for it. Some people never get that at all.
"Do we have it?"
We all waited, silent, as Eric punched a few buttons, his brow furrowed. Then, finally,
"Yep, we've got it."
"Hallelujah,"
Irv said, speaking for everyone.
"Can we go eat now?"
"You've been eating the whole time," Layla pointed out.
"I've been snacking,"
he corrected her.
"It's meal time."
"Actually, it's go time," she said. "Rosie's waiting for us. Let's get packed up, okay?" Mac nodded, then headed back into the recording room, where he, Irv, and Ford began dismantling the instruments and equipment. Upstairs, I could hear Ames moving around, as Layla turned her attention to Spence, still crashed out on the couch. He hadn't budged since falling asleep. "Luckily he sobers up fast," she told me, walking over and shaking his shoulder. "Spence, wake up. Time to go."
"Just 5 more minutes,"
he mumbled into the cushions. Layla shook her head, then picked up the vodka bottle from the floor. She began to twist the top on, but then changed her mind, opening it and taking a swig. Then she handed it out to me. I'd go over this moment again and again in the coming weeks. It was just such a stupid thing, a handful of seconds. And yet, it was a pivotal point, the shift between before and after. I don't know why I took the bottle, tipping it up to my mouth. Maybe it was the long night, or what still might lie ahead with Ames. Whatever the reason, I did it, taking one big gulp and closing my eyes tight as I swallowed. When I opened them, my mother was in the doorway. Like Ames, she'd just appeared. As I looked at her face, everything crystallized. The smooth glass of the bottle in my hand, Spence's foot hanging off the couch, the guys moving in my peripheral vision, talking amongst themselves, Layla beside me, equally surprised, that bottle again in my hand. "Sydney?" Like she wasn't sure it was me either. The crease between her brows
was deeper than I'd ever seen it.
What is going on here?
Mom, I said quickly, putting down the bottle. This seemed important, although I already knew it wasn't going to make any difference. It's not... They were just using the studio.
You're drinking.
A statement. Although she sounded so incredulous, it might as well have been a question. I wasn't, actually. She shifted her gaze to the vodka, then to Spence, snoring softly on the couch. I mean, I just took that sip. Just now.
You're drinking,
she repeated. She was looking into the recording room. Who are these people in Peyton's studio? My brother's band, Layla said. My mom looked at her. Mac, you met him at the pizza place? They needed to record a demo, and Sydney... I told you, remember? I cut in. And I said no. Her voice was clipped, each syllable sharp. She looked at me. You deliberately disobeyed me, Sydney. And you have alcohol here in our house, not to mention people I do not know. Mom! She raised a hand. Stop. I don't want to hear it. It's been a long, bad night. Just get these people out of here, now. Layla was instantly in motion, going over and giving Spence a hard enough shake to finally wake him up.
What?
He mumbled. Come on, she told him. Then she walked over to the board, hitting the intercom.
Speed it up, fellas. Time to go.
Eric, his back to us, sighed.
We're moving as quickly as we can. This is delicate equipment.
Go faster,
she snapped, then dropped her hand. Hearing this, they all stopped what they were doing and looked at us, finally seeing my mom. Mac's eyes went wide. It was strange to see him surprised. The next thing I knew, he was heading our way. Oh, God, I thought, both grateful and terrified, as he came through the door. Layla was busy with Spence, so it was just me there with my mom when he joined us.
Mrs. Stanford, he said, this isn't... Sydney was just doing me a favor. I shouldn't have put her in this position. It's my fault. Totally. I'm sorry.
He said this so genuinely, so truthfully, that I felt something inside my heart shift. Each time I thought I'd felt all I could for him, there was more. I slid my hand down his arm, wrapping my fingers around his.
You don't have to say that, I told him. I want to, he replied.
I'm sorry, but who are you? My mom snapped.
Mac, I said.
Layla's brother. My friend.
Boyfriend,
another voice said from outside the door. Ames.
Either that or just a guy she makes out with in parking lots.
What? I turned slowly to see Layla frozen behind me. She was looking at our still joined hands, the same way my mom had the bottle, as if she couldn't quite believe her eyes.
I saw them, Ames said to my mom. I wasn't going to tell you. Figured Sydney would. But I guess now you know.
Now I know, my mom repeated. To Mac, she said, is that your alcohol?
No, he replied. It's not.
She looked at me. I want these people out of here, Sydney. Do you understand me?
Mrs. Stanford, Mac said.
Do not talk to me. She kept her eyes level, dark and furious, and solidly on mine. Just get out of my house and take your friends with you. Now. Mac kept my hand in his a moment longer. Then he unfolded his fingers and let me go. As they'd come in and set up, there'd been constant conversation, directions of equipment placement, discussion of Eric's agitated disc.
all the back and forth of a group of people trying to get something done together. While they packed up, no one spoke. I knew because I was listening as I stared into my mom's eyes, still focused on mine. After so long in my own invisible place, I was squarely in her sights, just not the way I'd wanted to be. Distantly, I was aware of everything else that was happening. Layla brushing past me without a word, tugging a stumbling, sleepy Spence behind her. Eric's and Ford's quick, cautious looks. How surprisingly light Irv's large hand felt as it touched my shoulder briefly. And finally, Mac, the last one to leave us. Only then did my mom look away from me, her eyes following him. But I couldn't bring myself to do the same. I was not punished yet. Had no idea what would happen next. But already, all that space left in my heart, open after being clenched tight for so long, was narrowing. When the door shut behind them, I felt it close. Chapter 19. We weren't in a courtroom, and nobody asked me to rise, but I still knew a sentencing when I saw it. My mom, sitting across the table, cleared her throat, then looked at my dad. It was 7 a.m. the next morning. A half hour earlier, he'd come into my room and told me to wake up, get showered, and come downstairs. The first part was easy, as I hadn't slept all night. This, though, was going to be hard.
"Sydney?"
he began, as I crossed my legs tightly under the table.
"I don't think we have to tell you that we are very, very disappointed in you right now."
I said nothing. I knew I wasn't to speak yet.
"Your mother specifically told you that your friends could not use the studio,"
he continued.
"Still, you invited them to do so. You are underage and know the rules of this house, yet there was alcohol here, and you were drinking."
I couldn't help it. "I only..." He held up his hand, but it was my mom's glare that stopped me mid-sentence.
"You know how concerned and worried we both are about your brother and his situation. It's frankly unfathomable to us that you would choose to add to our burden, to this family's burden, with this kind of behavior."
"I wasn't trying to burden anyone," I said quietly, studying the tabletop. "I just wanted to help a friend." "This is Mac?" my mom said, enunciating his name like you might the word herpes or molestation. "Ames tells us he's your boyfriend." I felt my face flush, angry now. Ames doesn't know anything about me.
"Clearly. He came over expecting to watch a movie with you and found a party instead."
"It wasn't a party.
Sydney, there was a drunk boy here."
"That's Layla's boyfriend, and I didn't invite him. I hardly know him."
"Well, that's reassuring," my mom said.
"That's not..." I stopped, forcing myself to take a breath. "Mac and Layla are my friends. Mac's band had a chance to enter a showcase and needed a demo. We have a studio."
"A studio," my mom added,
"that we said they could not use."
"But at first you did," I pointed out.
"That night we ordered the pizza. You were open to it. And then Peyton called and he got angry with you, and just like that, everything changed."
"This is not about your brother," my dad said to me.
"For once," I said.
They both looked surprised. My voice was higher, louder than I'd realized.
"Everything is about Peyton all the time. And that's okay. I get it. But this was one thing for me that I wanted."
"You wanted to have your friends over, drinking unsupervised in our home?" my mom said.
"Well, that's great. just wonderful.
No!
I said, again loudly enough to get shot a look from my dad. I lowered my voice. I want